The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted today to be able to speak to CEO Matt Timmins of Fintel, a leading fintech provider of software, data, intelligence and associated services to the UK financial services industry. So big welcome, Matt.
Well, what an introduction, Paul. Thank you very much and delighted to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, well, big congrats as well on last week's positive year-end trading update with sales increasing 10% to £85.9 million. So maybe we can start there. Can you just give us a few words on what's been driving that impressive growth alongside the sort of rationale behind the recent sort of divisional simplification?
Yeah, absolutely. And if I can, I'll start there on the divisional simplification because I think that's the sort of key non-financial achievement, if you like, throughout the last 12 months. So, as you know, the business provides software and data and professional services to the intermediary market and also to product manufacturers. So we've previously operated from three different divisions. And what we've done over the last 12 months is really simplify things. You know, as far as we're concerned, we do two primary things. One is we provide software and data as a SaaS-based solution to the insurance market, the asset management market, and the financial intermediary market. So we put that into one division. And then the other thing that the business does is provide compliance and reg services to essentially the IFA market. So that's all in a separate division now. What that's enabled us to do, you'll notice that we've been pretty acquisitive over the last 12 or 18 months. We've taken the businesses that we've acquired and they've either gone into the software and data division or the services division. It means now as we go forward, instead of running with 8 or 9 different development teams and 8 or 9 different marketing teams, we can start to get some real synergies out of those acquisitions. We can have one roadmap for development, one product team, one marketing team, etc. So that sort of that divisional restructure has really helped the business in terms of its operational efficiency and moving forward. On top of that, we've made some good acquisitions. So they've also added into the revenue growth that you've seen there. But it's a slight beat on EBITDA in the market, slightly beat expectations there with earnings up 17%. So another good result for the year for us. So as we turn into this year now, we feel that we're in a really strong position. So we've got the business structured the way we want it to be structured. We've got our key customer sets in place. You know, everything we do is geared towards either the product manufacturing sector or the distribution sector of retail financial services. So two key clients, two key divisions, and we're up and running for this year already with a great start. So really pleased.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, I did notice actually, I mean, your EBIT margins are 30%. So you've got an enormous competitive moat here. What's your sort of the USPs of the business? Is it your data, your ratings, your pricing, or is it just the whole shebang? I mean, what's actually the real sort of like differentiators?
Yeah, I think it's the sort of flywheel of all those things together. So we've got the largest database of financial products in the UK through our Defaqto business. We've now, thanks to the acquisition of Pearson Ham Market Pricing Division, which I'm sure we'll come on to later, we've now acquired the pricing data set along with that. There are two key things in insurance, the products and the price, clearly. So we've got both of those data sets. And then we've got this phenomenal distribution power with the Simply Biz and 360. So you combine the product data, the ratings, the tech, and the distribution together. And that's the combination of those things is driving the growth.
Yeah. And then I guess, I mean, it's very topical at the moment because obviously there's a lot of concern in terms of how AI sort of like bots and the new Anthropic plugins are going to impact the whole of the sort of the data and information sectors. But can you just talk us through in terms of, because obviously you've got, it's in a regulated area, so it has to be absolutely spot on. You can't get sort of like, you can't have hallucinations. But also, presumably, your total addressable market is likely to increase because as more people have, basically, as more people adopt software and services to take out labour. But how do you see sort of Fintel being sort of like, you know, as a winner or potentially being impacted by all the changes going out in the States with these large language models?
It's a really important space at the moment. The There's a lot of new star AI businesses in our sector at the moment. And primarily, those businesses are bolt-ons to existing software. So you've got your CRM software or your financial planning software, and you pay monthly for an AI bolt-on to that software. And we haven't gone down that route. And there's a reason why. So fundamentally, I believe that we need to build AI into our own products rather than layer it on top. So our developers at the moment are using AI to develop the next range of products for us. So we are using AI massively within the business, but we're not bolting it on top and saying it's a specific product. AI will be contained in all of our products rather than sold as a feature on top. That's the way the market is going to move. It's going to move pretty fast in that way. You rewind back 12 months ago, and primarily AI was about speech recognition, right? And again, that's just going to become commoditized. So we're investing into AI at the ground level to improve the products that we have and that we offer out into the marketplace. The other thing that's happening in that space is that when advisors are using some of the AI functionality that exists at the moment, it's not coming up with the right answer. And the AI is refusing to agree that it's not the right answer. So I think there's a lot of danger around that space. And then you have to ask yourself what's happening with the data. So if you're the largest provider of product data and pricing data now, you really want to keep that in a competitive moat. So we're not out integrating with, A, B, and C company all the time. We're building our own solutions in-house for our own customers with our own database at the heart of it.
Yeah, so effectively, these large language models, maybe these plugins, are going to pick up your data as sort of citations. And I could totally understand if I was an IFA and I was sort of like doing financial regulated activities, recommendations to my clients, I wouldn't want to be right sort of like, 95% of the time and 5% of the right. It's not going to be very good for my outcomes of my clients. So yeah, no, I could totally get it. Maybe that's a very good moment then, just to segue into that sort of January's purchase of Pearce and Ham, the 11 million pounds. How does that fit into your overall strategy?
Yeah, so a big part of the strategy going forward in Defaqto is the continuation of what we call Matrix 360. So Matrix 360 is a product used by insurers, price comparison websites, and anyone involved in personal lines insurance that helps them understand the relative competitive nature of one product over another. So compare car insurance A with car insurance B. But that only gives you one side of the story. It doesn't give you the pricing data in with it. So car insurance A might be better. It could be three times the price. So in order to have a proper comparison around products, you need the pricing data to come into that. And pricing data happens in kind of three main ways. So there's a price for the, it depends on the asset that you want to protect. So is it your car, your home, your pet, whatever it is? It depends on your own personal demographics of where you live and your income and the loads of bits and pieces like that. But then there's also a lot of variable pricing involved, which people don't necessarily understand. So the quicker you go to renewal date, for example, the higher the price of your policy is going to be because there is a weighting put on by the insurers around how well prepared you are to take out your new policy. The policies are also, they're also aggregated by book. So if an insurer has already covered 17 Mercedes-Benzes in your postal code area and you want to cover the 18th, you might find the pricing's a lot higher. Nothing to do with you or the car, it's just the book they already carry, the risk they already carry. So what the Pearce & Ham pricing business does is it assesses those three key pricing areas, so the asset yourself and those variable pricing. So it helps insurers and it helps pricing comparison websites work out exactly how to price their proposition and where they sit amongst their peers. What it will enable us to do on top of that, which we haven't been able to do currently, is when we look at star ratings and product ratings, we can now move to a value-based rating. So we can tell you at the moment which travel insurance policy is the best. But if you only want to use it for 7 days worth of skiing in the Alps, and you've only got £40 to spend on it, then that's a different question. But with the pricing data put into the product data, we can then help you do value-based assessments. So it's going to help us in a number of different ways. It's a high-quality business with a decade's worth of pricing data or more. And it really is that kind of missing plug-in to the product data.
Yeah, I can just imagine that actually. If I was going through a large language model and I was just putting, okay, I want sort of like, I don't know, car insurance or something like that, the data that you, the source core data and the ratings that you provide, whoever to, is going to be the source sort of citation that's going to provide and direct that one answer that's going to come through from the large language model. So that's
Yeah,
yeah, that is real priority power, isn't it?
it is. And I think those things are really important. You know, who provides the customer with the service at the end of the day is going to change quite a lot over the next few years, you know, as AI kick in. Who has the access to the raw quality data is almost distribution agnostic. You know, we'll power whatever model is the right model going forward. And then you can also look at other things that are changing in the sector at the moment. So from a regulatory perspective, we're about to come up with, or we're about to see the new dawn of something called targeted support, which is going to allow primarily product manufacturers, but other people as well, to go out and talk to their customers and nudge them into financial decisions. And the word nudge is the one that's used most frequently with this. So should the customer be investing more, or should they be swapping out of one product and going into another? Well, my view is, in order to do that properly, you need to be able to do a effective comparison between old products and new products. And again, who best to be able to provide that data than Defaqto? Not only do we have all the product data, but we also rate each individual product. So I can see us playing a big part in the future of what is going to become targeted support as well.
Yeah, again, I could see if I was an IFA and I had a whole bunch of support staff, the data that you give me will increase, but it will get an increasing share of my wallet as I so don't if I you know can remove that expensive support staff and use your data direct to give a better quality product to my client who I'm advising faster and you know more targeted. So yeah, no. I can understand the strategy now. Now that is brilliant timing because I did see on the RNSs that, and you know, you have personally bought quite a few shares just to rate. In fact, I think it was about over £600,000 worth. I don't think you can say any few words because that really is a show of confidence in the business by the CEO.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this is a phenomenal business, and I think it's been undervalued for a long period of time. I know the quality of the customer base we've got, of the products we've got, the people we've got in the business. And you know, the way that the business is structured, as you pointed out earlier, the majority of it is recurring revenue. It's kind of 60, 70% recurring revenue. And the balance is repeating revenue. So it's coming from the same people buying the same product. We just can't call it mechanically recurring because it's not a monthly subscription. So the visibility over cash flows and the visibility over financial performance that we get is phenomenal. And you know, taking all those factors into consideration, I've got huge confidence in the future of this business. And therefore, you know, I invested a significant amount, as you say, at the start of this year. I've been in a closed period for over 12 months. I would have gone earlier otherwise, but with the acquisition of Pearson Ham, I market pricing business, I couldn't move earlier. So as soon as that was over the line, and I was able to, I bought some shares in the business, a significant number. And I think Chairman Phil Smith has also done the same thing as well. So
Yeah,
yeah.
no, big show of confidence. Just in terms of the M&A strategy going forward, is it going to be a sort of like continuation of sort of bolt-ons and sort of like complementary, you know, add-ins to the actual business or anything? You probably don't need anything transformational because you've probably got most of the
No,
tools.
I feel now that we've gone through a programmatic series of M&A over the last 18 months, and we have got pretty much everything we need going forward to enact on the strategy. So I think this is more about a period of debt pay down than aggressive, you know, M&A. Having said that, there are a couple of gaps in the mortgage area that I'd like to plug. You can never tell when those kind of opportunities are gonna come to fruition. So if an opportunity comes up in the mortgage space, we'll seriously look at that. Outside of that, I think the main focus now is debt pay down. So we've got a great RCF facility, and I want to make sure that we pay our debt down quickly, and that RCF facility continues with us for when we see the next big opportunity.
Brilliant. Okay, then just the end. Is there any sort of closing remarks for the next 12 months? What sort of like investors can expect? I did see you've got your thing is your prelims in March, is it? And then you've got your capital markets day in April.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the Capital Markets Day. I think it gives us the ideal opportunity to showcase what we do. So expect to see some customer case studies in there. Expect to see some overviews and demonstrations of our products. So I'm really looking forward to that. As we look forward to this year, and we're already into February, but as we look forward to this year, I think the main focus is on, as I say, debt pay down and on organic growth. You know, we've got all the component parts that we need now. We've restructured the business. This is about going forward, winning some big enterprise deals, and really putting our foot to the floor on organic growth. And I think that's what you're going to see from us this year, is a business that's gone through a big transformation, has gone through a big investment into software and data, and that those efforts will start to really materialize in terms of, you know, increased organic growth.
Yeah, well, I'll certainly have a good look through that slide pack when it comes to the Capital Markets Day. I mean, I'd love that. I mean, you're obviously perfectly positioned in the new AI future, so that'll be absolutely fascinating to see. So, anyway, big congrats, Matt, on the positive trading update last week, and look forward in hearing the prelims in March. So, thanks again.
Great stuff. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having us on.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.